Good day, and welcome to the quarterly all-VR call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Robert Pass. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. As always, we appreciate your service to our beneficiaries, and we have a lot to share with you today. Just want to open it up to let you know that we are still processing an enormous amount of cost reimbursement claims are pending. I think we will share some information shortly with you in terms of workload data, but just a reminder that I would like to share with everyone, and that is to please submit your claim with all necessary documentation and evidence so that we can process the case. We are seeing an increase in the number of claims that we are denying, and we know that the automation associated with the Ticket to Work portal enables folks to, you know, to have greater ease in submitting claims for processing. But when we're seeing a lot of claims come in with higher denial rates from some states, it causes us concern, and we're not able to address the cases that could be paid in a timely manner. So my ask for all of you is to please make sure you're submitting the best and most documented cases possible to us for payment, and that this will help us process your case more timely, pay your cases more timely, and get our backlog down. And that's all I have for opening. I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Janelle Bratcher.
Thank you so much, Rob. Hi, everyone. So I do want to cover a couple things today, starting out with our payment hold policy. And you may refer to that as payment release or payment release date. Just to cover it, I don't know if everyone is aware, but currently we do receive requests to release payments on specific days, days that may occur after the claim is processed. Just to give you a little bit of information, this is affecting our budget data, really in terms of fiscal year budget. When we get to the end of a fiscal year, if we're holding payments into the next fiscal year, it does throw our budget off. And I know this was a courtesy that we provided for many years, but we have some concerns for our own budget data, and we do have to keep that in consideration. With that in mind, we will start a new policy effective January 1st, 2020, where we're going to be eliminating our current policy. And the new policy will be to make payments as the claim is processed. So you won't be allowed to send us in special requests for payments to occur or be postdated. We will pay all claims as they're processed. And regarding our backlog, so we are working vigorously and tirelessly to try to bring our backlog claims down. I know we mentioned two calls ago that with cases that are pending over 60 days, we ask you to reach out to our VR help desk and just inquire about the status of those claims. That is our policy. However, right now we are processing cases that are about 120 days old. So there is no need for you to reach out to the help desk to inquire about claims that are 60 days old, because there's a 99% guarantee that those claims are not processed, and you can see in the portal that we have received them, but they're still awaiting adjudication. If you have claims that are over 120 days and you feel the need to inquire about those, you can reach out to us to do so. You definitely don't have to, but please, if you feel the need, wait at least 120 days for the claims pending before you reach out to the VR help desk. Right now, we have around 9,000 cases total pending and about 3,000 cases backlogged, just to give you a little data. The last thing that I want to cover is VR claim documentation requirements. We've been very lax in our documentation requirements. Our policy has always stated that the VR provider be responsible for submitting a properly documented claim. However, we have not been denying cases based on your proof of evidence documentation submission. With that being said, we will be requiring proof of earnings, and this is going to go into effect November 1st. If you do not send proof of earnings with your claim, we will deny the claim for failure to receive appropriate evidence.
And that's all I have. Thanks so much. I'm going to turn the call over to Adele.
Thank you very much, Janelle. Good afternoon, everyone. So the next few slides, what we are going to do is we're going to take some time to discuss timely progress review. Of course, it is my understanding there is nothing that you would need to do at this time. Social Security will be releasing a few timely progress reviews. However, we just want you to be well informed on how to assist your ticket holders. Okay, next slide. Okay, well, what is a TPR? It is a review of Ticket to Work participants' progress toward a work and earnings goal that is conducted approximately every 12 months, and the review is designed to determine whether ticket holders are making progress towards a goal of work and earnings that eliminates SSDI and SSI cash payments. The review is conducted by comparing a ticket holder's current work and earnings, as well as educational achievements, against timely progress guidelines established by Social Security. And ticket holders working with service providers under the ticket program are not guaranteed protection from a medical CDR indefinitely. Rather, ticket holders must be making timely progress and meet all of the requirements of the ticket program. And when ticket holders fail their TPR, they must successfully complete reentry to regain medical CDR protections. And passing a TPR usually renews medical CDR exemption for at least 12 additional months. And it is critical that service providers thoroughly understand the TPR process, as it is the responsibility of service providers to assist the ticket holders throughout the TPR process. Let's look at the next slide. So, protection from a medical CDR. Medical continuing disability reviews are used to determine a beneficiary's continued eligibility for SSDI and SSI cash benefits. Medical CDRs typically occur on a regular schedule, such as once every 3 years or once every 5 years. The exact schedule for a medical CDR varies based on the nature of the disability. Participation in the ticket program can grant medical CDR protection to ticket holders. And ticket holders must assign their tickets to either an employment network or a state VR agency. And medical CDR protection is granted when the ticket status is set to in use. Let's look at the next slide. Your responsibilities. It is the responsibility of all service providers to understand the TPR process. So you must further ensure that your clients fully understand the TPR process, the steps to complete the TPR process, and the consequences of failing a TPR. As a service provider, you should be fully equipped to answer all questions from your clients regarding TPR. Social Security strongly recommends that you encourage a timely response to the initial TPR notice as well as subsequent requests for additional information. And if a ticket holder fails a TPR, you should actively assist the ticket holder with the TPR reentry so that the ticket can be placed back in use. And the ticket holder, again, can regain their medical CDR protection. Let's look at the TPR process overview. Now, for the TPR process, the first step is to check whether or not earnings in the Social Security system meet the TPR guidelines. And if so, the TPR has been met and no notice is sent to the ticket holder. The ticket holder will never know that a TPR even occurred. And if the earnings check does not meet TPR guidelines, the next step is that Social Security sends a notice to the ticket holder that they have been selected for a TPR. Okay, and looking at step two, some details about that. See, next slide. Here, the selection criteria for TPR are based on many factors, including the current pay status of the ticket holder, the CDR, classification, ticket assignment, and previous TPR history. Ticket holders receive a selection notice letter, which contains a letter with TPR specifics for that individual ticket holder and the TPR requirements chart, along with their form SSA 1375. And keep in mind that TPM must receive the form SSA 1375 from the ticket holder within approximately 55 calendar days to begin the review process. So on the next slide, we'll see the TPR outcomes. Oh, sorry, we put here a sample of what that SSA form looks like. It's just a quick glimpse of it. I'm sure if you're servicing your beneficiaries, you've actually had a better look than this, but we just wanted to make sure if you hadn't, that you had a quick look at it. Okay, so now I'll go on to the TPR outcomes. Okay, if a ticket holder passes a TPR, medical CDR protection is usually extended for at least 12 additional months, and no follow-up letter is sent to the ticket holder regarding the pass. The ticket holder receives the next review after the ticket has a period of at least 12 additional months of in-use status. And if, in the other section, a ticket holder fails the TPR, a failure notice is sent to the ticket holder explaining the option to appeal. And if the ticket holder is unsuccessful in appealing or chooses not to appeal the failure, after the appeal period ends, medical CDR protection ends for the ticket holder. And the ticket holder is subject then to a regularly scheduled medical CDR. The ticket holder will not be selected for future TPR selections until after successful reentry is completed. Okay, the next slide, we talk about when TPR requirements are not met. So what happens when a ticket holder fails the TPR? The ticket does remain assigned to the service provider. Medical CDR protection ends after the TPR failure appeal period is over, and the ticket status is changed to not in use. And the next medical CDR will be conducted during the time that the medical CDR would have been scheduled to occur. And failing a TPR does not result in an automatic medical CDR. That's good for us to know that. For example, as we see here, assume that a ticket holder began receiving benefits in 2017 with a medical CDR scheduled for every 3 years and then assigned their ticket to an EN in the same year. The next year, in 2018, the ticket holder fails to meet TPR requirements. After the appeals period ends, the ticket holder loses their medical CDR protection. However, a medical CDR won't occur automatically in 2018 or 2019. Rather, if you see here, the medical CDR would then be conducted in 2020 according to the regular schedule. So again, just ensuring that we understand that that failing does not prompt the CDR. It usually sticks to that, to their schedule. Okay. Next, I think we'll talk about the appeals security review on the next slide. Now, ticket holders may appeal a failed TPR decision within approximately 55 calendar days. And the appeal request must include evidence of progress made, such as a copy of pay stubs, unofficial or official transcripts, or a copy of a certificate or diploma for completion of an educational program. Ticket holders can fax or mail the request, and specific contact information is provided in the TPR failure notice, and Social Security will make a final decision based on the information submitted in the appeal and then mail the decision directly to the ticket holder. And if the information provided is still not adequate to pass the TPR, the ticket holder will be sent a final failure notice with information on the process for the TPR reentry. So on the next slide, we talk about the TPR reentry. Now, TPR reentry is a process of course, as it sounds, re-entering the ticket program after a final failure notice, and can be performed by a ticket holder at any time after a final failure notice. And the request for re-entry should be submitted with evidence of passing the requirements, again, such as the pay stubs, the unofficial or the official transcripts, or a copy of a certificate or diploma for completion of an educational program. And the ticket holders should wait after failing a TPR until they have successfully completed the requirements out. Covered up.
Oh.
Okay. I'm not sure where we lost that. We have some technical difficulties currently in the room. So what I'll do is I'll start with this TPR reentry slide. I think is that a safe place to start? Okay. So the TPR reentry is the process of reentering the ticket program after a final failure notice and can be performed by a ticket holder at any time after a final failure notice. And the request for reentry should be submitted with the evidence of passing the requirements, as we've indicated, the pay stubs, the official or unofficial transcripts, or a copy of a certificate of diploma for completion of an educational program. And ticket holders should wait after failing a TPR period until they have successfully completed the requirements outlined in the TPR guidelines before attempting the TPR reentry. Okay, now looking on the other side, If a ticket holder successfully completes the TPR reentry, they usually earn at least 12 months of medical CDR protection. Of course, you're assuming that the ticket is assigned to a service provider. And the ticket holder is notified by mail of the successful reentry, and then the ticket is placed in use. I think I'm still on the other slide, but I'm still completing the other chart. There we go. Thank you. The ticket is placed in use status effective the month and the year of the reentry decision. Okay, so here I'll now look at the right side where we speak about the failed reentry attempt. If a ticket holder fails a reentry attempt, no change will be made to the ticket's not in use status. And the ticket holder will be notified by mail of the failed reentry attempt and provided information about the process to appeal a failed TPR reentry decision. Okay, we can look at that next slide. So here, some information about how to access TPR requirements online. You'll go to your ticket2work.ssa.gov, and you'll choose program operations. Then you'll look for the requirements under the timely progress review section. So the next few slides, I know I've been talking a lot, and you're probably going to get tired. So we'll try to quickly go over the next ones. Again, this information is available for you online, so we'll take a quick peek at the following slides. For the first review, here you notice that they need to acquire or achieve 3 months of work at or above the trial work level, complete at least 60% of a full-time course load for an academic year and 2-year or 4-year college or technical trade. Now, here's what I really will emphasize and make sure that we understand the combo. What does a combination mean? A combination means that ticket holders can complete part of the work and part of the education requirement. Social Security counts the parts ticket holders complete as percentages, and Social Security will total the amount of the work and the educational percentages, and, of course, they must total to 100%. We all like 100%. And so this is what the ticket holder must achieve in the, well, combination. I called it a combo, but that's an unofficial term. All right, so that's the first review. The second review on the next slide, again, you see the combination at the bottom, but we're looking for 6 months of work at or above the trial work level, completion of at least 75% of the courses, and again, as we've indicated, the combination. And in the third review, on that the next slide, there's 9 months of work at or above SGA, the Substantial Gainful Activity, completing their academic four-year college. And then, of course, the combination is in there, and you have more details regarding that. We'll go and look at that fourth review on the next slide. 9 months of work at or above SGA, and again, looking for completing that four-year college degree. And the combination, again, a reminder, combination to be acceptable must be 100%. And our fifth review on the next slide, 6 months of work and earnings. And in each of those 6 months that prevent payment of SSDI or the federal SSI cash benefit, and still we're looking at the four-year college completion and or the combination, and, of course, have either earned that degree or certificate. We have a sixth review that we'll look at. We're almost done, folks. We're almost there. Sixth review, you have the 6 months of work and have earnings in each of those 6 months and prevent payment of SSDI and federal SSI cash benefits. And, of course, completion of that degree. But if you notice here, we do not indicate the combination. And on the seventh review, 6 months of work and have earnings in each of those 6 months that prevent the payment of SSDI and federal SSI cash benefits. I believe at this point we go to the next slide. There's some additional resources for you where to go. But in addition to these resources, we actually will open up the lines because we have some experts here to help us out and for some questions that you may have. So, Zaina, if you can open up the line and provide some instructions on how to ask questions.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to ask a question by phone, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause just for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will now take our first question from David Leon. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have two questions. The first is for Janelle, and thank you all. Janelle, you indicated that we would no longer be allowed to hold our paid claims, and I'm just wondering if that includes for those of us that just pick one date of the month to have them paid, and then if so, what about the option of moving them to the last day of that month? And the reason I say this is for us, that means in a given month we're going to have 30, maybe 40 times where we are trying to fight with our state treasury for being able to move the money that comes in from a different state agency into our program to utilize the program income. And I also want to clarify before I move on to question two that you said that this would be effective January 1st. Can you comment on both the date of it goes into effect, and if that's possible, and then I'll move on to my question about the TPRs.
Hi, David. It is Adele. I apologize. I was not clear. This break is regarding the TPR section. We can definitely answer the question. Janelle can answer your question, but just to make sure that we're all clear on the line, that this particular break is for the TPR because we do have some other things we want to cover, but I'll let you go ahead and have Janelle answer that question for you. And then you can ask your TPR question, okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Hi, David. So to answer the second part of your question, yes. So that policy effective date is January 1st, 2020. You're correct. Considering the last part, if you could just go ahead and send us your question in writing, the blanket policy is that we are going to be making payments when we adjudicate. However, you can always feel free to send any other issues that you may have precluding that.
Okay. Thank you. And then for my TPR question, I really have a couple, but I'll try to summarize this into one. If an individual is put where in their out of assignment because they have failed the TPR, but VR is providing services during that time and ends up exiting, closing successfully, going to work right away to where we aren't in a position to help them with the next, will we, and we get an eventual cost reimbursement, will the dollars spent during a period when someone had failed their TPR still be allowed in a claim? So that's part A of my question. Part B of my question is, where and how is the staffing needed for this process going to affect the current lag in processing SSA claims that are already in the 120-day backlog? Because the way this sounds, when we're sending in information multiple times to move someone back into status, it's going to be a lot of staff time. So I'm just curious if we should expect our claims processing to get slower over time as a result. But more importantly, will those services during a period where someone had failed the TPR be covered?
Okay, David. I appreciate that question that you made an attempt to summarize. So we have a few folks here trying to huddle that up and get to an answer.
David, it would be appreciated if you can say, because that's a rather comprehensive question, if you could send that to us in writing so that we can answer it step by step and just consider the question fully.
Well, but did you understand the question, which is, it really is a straightforward question that I provide services A, B, and C. Services B and C happen after someone failed the TPR. Will they be allowed when I file the claim?
Yes, and we do understand. We understand the question, but if you could provide it to us, that'll just give us a little bit more time to consider it before we respond.
This is Katie. Can I jump in?
Sure.
David, so when a person fails their timely progress review, they lose their CDR protection, and their ticket is taken out of in-use status. But their ticket is not unassigned. It is not, no, it's not closed with your agency. The ticket will still be open with your agency or assigned to your agency until you yourself close it or, you know, the ticket terminates.
Yeah, no, I understood that part.
Okay.
I understood that part. And in my mind, this doesn't change anything, but given the way this was discussed, I wanted to make sure I heard an affirmative. What I believe I understand is still true, and it sounds like the answer is yes, those items will still be paid because the case is still assigned to our agency.
Yes. That's why I wanted to make sure I jumped in it, because TPR affects the beneficiary's CDR protection, but in no way, shape, or form affects the beneficiary's ability to get services from you or for you to provide services. It does not affect your case.
Okay. But I'll still put it in writing for the other part related to processing time.
Great, thank you.
Hi,
David. This is Raquel. Just to answer the last part of your question in regards to your concerns with the backlog, with the VR claims and TPR, two different items handled by two different staff. So, in other words, the VR team handles only the VR claims. Anything that's dealing with TPR is handled by a different component. So there will be no additional lag time in processing your claims because we don't work with the TPR portion of what you're asking about.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes great sense.
We're bogged down enough. We're pushing through enough. So we definitely understand and appreciate your concern, but just know that it's a completely different team that handles the TPR portion and the VR claims. Okay, good. Thanks, David. Zaina, are there any other questions in the queue?
Yes. We will now take our next question from Jay Morrow from Morrow Consulting. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jay.
Hello, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good. What is your TPR question for today?
So I did have a TPR question from earlier in your the meeting, and I don't know if maybe you wanted me to wait on other questions, but this one is not TPR.
Because we have an agenda, and we would greatly appreciate it, to use David's words, if you can hold that till the end so we can get through our agenda and get through some of the TPR questions.
Sure.
So, I thank you for that. Zane, if you can remind folks how to retrieve their questions, just to make sure that we're clear that we only have TPR questions in the queue for this particular moment.
So if you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, please press star 2 on your telephone keypad. All right, so we're going to start with Miraj Patel from Social Security.
Can we skip that?
Okay. So we're going to take our question from Eugenia Cox from State of Oregon.
Hi, it's Eugenia. I wanted to ask two questions with regards to the TPRs. One, I had asked the question about a TPR notice notifying them that they've passed the TPR. When I had asked for samples of this several years ago, there was none. And were you guys looking into actually developing one?
This is Carol Dempsey. We do not have one. Did we look into it, Katie, as far as developing one? Because I know we don't have one now. Everything's the same with TPR. Katie?
Yeah, this is Katie. Just to confirm, nothing has changed about the notices.
Okay, so they'll only...
Yes, they only get a failed notice.
Eugenia, we lost you.
Yes. Can you please press star 1 again? Please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We hear you now.
My concern was is that all they're going to get is a failure notice, and, you know, all these are devastating, but they won't ever know if they passed. So my request is to somehow develop a letter that says, you know, you passed your yearly timely progress review. My second question is that if you've had somebody that's never received a TPR and you've been working with them for several years, and so they won't get the first year TPR, will they get the year that they originally started working from and where they currently are now?
Because they have not pulled TPRs in 5 years, they will get an automatic pass.
So they won't get a TPR at all if they're still in service with us?
No, they will get a TPR, but they will automatically pass the years they missed, so it'll go on to the third review or fourth review. They get an automatic pass.
Oh, okay. So they're going to, if we've been working with them, here's an example. If California VR was working with them 5 years ago and they work with them for a couple of years and they passed it at that point or there wasn't one, then they come to us and they work with us a couple of years, they're probably going to get a fourth year review. I just want to get this straight in my head.
Yes, you are correct.
Okay, that's kind of what I've been training our field staff to be prepared where it really might not make any sense because there's only one start time to a ticket. So that's what I've been trying to drill into people's heads, that if they've used the ticket before, that start time, is that correct? There's only that one start time.
There's going to be one start time when we start these up very shortly, but anything that they miss on a TPR will be a pass. So we're not causing any problems. We're actually passing them without doing anything right now.
No. I mean, if in my example, if they were using if they started using their ticket 5 years ago with, or 6 years ago with California BR, and then they closed there, is that start time still going to be in effect for this new period of TPRs that are coming out?
Katie, do you know the answer? How the computer?
Hey, can I jump in, Carol?
Yes.
Sorry, this is the part we don't have any here, the selection criteria. So the way can you hear me okay, Eugenia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the way the programming works is, in order to be selected, so say we run this in November, you have to be in use in the month of November when we run the selection job to mail out the notices. We look at you and we count up the amount of months your ticket has been in use, and we divide by 12, and that gives us the number. So it is actually counting up months, not, you know, to get year, to add up to years, but, you know, if it's 3 months here plus 6 months there, you get a whole year. So that's how that math is going to work. Does that help?
Yeah, I'm trying to get, like I said, I know that if they ever use their ticket before, that date, I'm more looking like for the date that they started using it.
You can't. It's not a flat date, because if there's a break and there was an entire year where they weren't assigned or in use with anyone, that year doesn't count towards their. That's what the in-use month. We count the actual month they're with somebody. So
okay. So if there's a gap.
If there's a gap,
okay.
Don't count that gap.
Okay. So if there's a 5 year or 6 year gap, you're going to start it effective when we first assign that ticket if they're currently in use.
Plus any prior months.
Plus any prior months that they may have had 6 years before?
Yes, it's going to go all the way back. Like, you're going to take right now, it's November. Back in 2017, I worked with a provider. I took a break for a year, and now I'm working with you. That break is not going to count towards the total, but I'm still going to count that year they were with the original person.
Yeah.
It's not the date, it's the amount of time. The amount of time they were with someone.
Okay. Yeah, but when they get the TPR may not make any sense, because it's going to use that original start date. That's where I'm coming from. Remember, if they started using it 6 years ago with California VR in January, you're going to count was done down there.
No, we're not going to. No, we don't. The old process did use a start date. We're not using the start date.
Okay, for determining when they get it.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Okay, so it'll start as of whenever they... Okay, that makes more sense. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Katie, what we'll do at this time, we're going to jump back into the agenda, and that means I'm supposed to hand it over to you, Katie, and then at the end we'll have more time for questions. So there you go, Katie, with the RSA code.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone, again. This is Katie Streibinger. I just wanted to draw your attention to a gov delivery message we sent out. The portal has been updated with the latest RSA codes. They're all effective October 4th, 2019. Because there was an overlap and the change to the RSA codes affected the old codes, there were a couple of codes that had an overlap, so they both couldn't be in effect in the same time. We cannot go back and use the old code. So if you go in the portal to submit a claim, the only code you're going to see today are the new codes in the dropdowns. If you're using a file, you're going to need to use the new RSA code in any files you submit pretty much from today on. We do recommend that if you're having a problem trying to figure out what code to use, you can reach out to us so we can help you there. We did send out in the gov delivery the sheet of the changes. Like I said, it was pretty much a wholesale change, the RSA codes from the previous codes to the new codes. So the blast contains the new codes that we're using. We do also recommend as an option, you always have the ability to use SSA codes instead of RSA codes. And we do not plan to change the SSA codes anytime soon. So they're a great standby and a great something to use if you want to use codes that are not going to be changing. And I will be here for the Q&A if anybody has any specific questions when we get to the end of our call. And I'm going to hand it over to Raquel next.
Thank you, Katie. Good afternoon, everyone.
I just have a few things. Some of them are listed on your agenda and some are not. For the portal calculator, I know I've received a few questions on the VR Help Desk in regards to this. Just so you know, when you are calculating the SSI amount, it's always the most recent SSI amount that the beneficiary is receiving. If you are to look and that you don't see an amount on there, it reads all zeros, then it is this year's SSI amount that should be used when you're using the portal calculator. So that's just the FYI. If you have any questions about that, send me an email to the VR Help Desk. For the fiscal year 20 cost formula, just so you all know, I know for the majority of you, I don't even receive the cost formula back until about January, but so you know, you should be receiving the normal letter that I usually send by the end of this month, just the FYI, so you're still going to have all of your months to get it together, get all the information, documentation together that you'll need to submit. But I know some of you have asked about when it's coming. By the end of this month, you'll receive it. And I do always try to send it to the SSA coordinator, which is the majority of you on the phone, and I just ask that if it needs to be forwarded to the finance person, I send it just to you and place you guys in charge of forwarding it out to whoever else needs it, whether it be the director, the finance person, because I don't have their contact information. I usually always use my SSA coordinator. So that's just the FYI. Also, when you're uploading your claims, it is the VR's responsibility to check for errors at the time that you're uploading. We all know that as soon as you upload a claim or a list of claims, you should be able to run a pending claim report and see those claims on the pending claim report. If you're receiving errors, it's your responsibility to check those errors. If you have questions about them, email the VR Help Desk. But if you're not discovering the error until a month or two later, you can't come back and request a timely filing waiver because you're now submitting the correct claim without the error a month later. So that's just a FYI for anyone that's having those type of issues. And then lastly, in regards to SSN errors, if you're finding that you're uploading a claim and you're getting the name error, something like that, you can email me with the Social Security number and the person's name. If the Social Security number is wrong, I cannot give you the correct Social Security number. Okay, that goes against our PII rules. If you happen to have two different Social Security numbers for a person and you have the correct name, that's something different. But I cannot, if the SSN is wrong, I cannot give you the correct SSN. You're going to have to ask the counselor or whoever's in touch with the beneficiary to go back and try to get the correct information. So that's just the FYI. Now I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Shada Roper.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is in regards to our records retention. So Raquel gets an enormous amount of questions about records retention, and I know your system has changed. RSA has changed their time for holding documentation and information. So we've done a lot of research, and we're following federal policy. So we're asking that you retain all receipts and records, especially due to the fact that you get a lot of C3 notices until 6 years after we've paid you. So once you've been paid your cost amount, please hold your receipts, your records, the IEPs that are signed. A copy is fine as long as it's signed for 6 years after. We have not yet put it in a blast, but it will be forthcoming in a blast. In addition to that, we are updating the handbook to give you that information in writing, so it will be 6 years after you've been paid. As far as the 610 denials, that goes back to the savings to the trust fund. So if by chance you have a 610 denial that you are questioning, if it was a savings to the trust fund or if it had to do with old age and retirement benefits, please, yes, if you're questioning the notices that you receive, send those directly to me. shada.t.roper@ssa.gov. I will look into the claim
and I will let you know if I need to do a notice for you, which I'll be able to do. And I would like to hand it back to Raquel.
Thank you, Shada. Just one last thing before we open it up to all questions. In regards to reconsiderations, when you are submitting, uploading your reconsideration, they must match the initial claim. In other words, the VR enter date has to be the same, the VR closure date has to be the same, and the total amount being requested has to be the same. If it does not mirror the original claim that was submitted, I have asked all of my lead technicians and analysts to send them back to me, and I let you all know that the claim is going to be deleted or denied, and you'll have to submit a new reconsideration. So that's something that everyone should know. You're asking us to go back and look at the original claim anyway, so it should match it exactly. That's all I have. So, operator, if you want to go ahead and open up the call for any questions, please.
Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our next question from Susan Tietjen from the Department for Aging and Rehabilitative Services. Please go ahead.
Yes. My question is about the documentation, the proof of earnings. Do you need that for each and every claim or only if it's denied?
That would be each and every claim.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Susan.
We will now take our next question from Megan Lamb from Arkansas Division of Services for the Blind.
My question was about the new income verification you want us to submit. So does that mean we cannot submit a claim if we can't get income verification? Because we've had a lot of trouble with that in Arkansas. And so that's going to really limit some of our claims to get, like, official documentation. I just want to make sure I know what to tell my director.
Hi, Megan. In those situations, I know with you all, you have a lot of out-of-state issues and things like that going on. When you're uploading, if you could just email, give a heads-up to the VR help desk with those type of situations so we're aware of it. The policy is pretty much a blanket policy that when you're submitting claims to the portal, all of them should have the earnings information. But we do understand in your situation the type of issues that you run into a lot.
Right. Because one of the things that we just found out is, like, we can't get SSDI wage verification from our U.S. source. They won't give it to us. And they're willing to potentially do, like, a yes, they're above the amount, or no, they're below. But obviously, that's not proof. And so that would
right.
be for anybody on SSDI from our agency. And so that's kind of our concern, you know.
Right. Again, because we've worked with you, we're aware of that issue that you're having. So we can actually speak offline in regards to that. But that is a blanket rule for pretty much the majority of the state VR agencies, that you should already be submitting earnings information with your claim.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question is from Carla Bell from California Department of Rehabilitation. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. So we did receive that notice that stated the code change that was going to effect on Friday, October 4th. But on Thursday, October 3rd, we submitted claims and received 42 RSA code errors. Will we receive a timely reprieve, and how should we proceed?
Katie, you there?
Yes. Oh, so what are you, sorry, this, I just want to make sure I understand. So you're saying it's going to take you X amount of time to redo the claims with the new codes?
Yes, and I think also we have the issue.
Go ahead.
I'm also, possibly there's the issue with our case management system. We have checked and they do have the new RSA codes, but potentially they might need to still be changed in the tracker software that we use to process the claims. And so if that takes some time to get you the resubmitted claim, so there aren't code errors, will we have the ability to receive a timely reprieve for that?
Well, in that case, you know, send, and this is Janelle Bratcher, please send me those requests in writing
okay.
We can consider that option.
Will do. Thank you, Janelle.
And keep in mind that the option is always open to use SSA codes.
Okay.
We will now take our next question from Virginia Cox from State of Oregon. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. It kind of concerns me now that I heard from Carla that they're getting code errors. When I was under the assumption that all the old codes were not going to be eliminated, so in other words, it wouldn't cause a bunch of rejections of our claims. Because our claims are going to be not just as of today. Our claims can be 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and they're going to have the old codes. So was I wrong when I assumed that those codes were not going to go away?
This is Katie. Like I said on the call, because there were two different codes and categories, it is in the attachment that was on the Gov delivery, because codes were actually substituted and modified by RSA, which we had no control over, there was no way to keep the old codes and just add. If there was a way to have just added the new codes, we would have done it, but there was no way because of the overlap.
Okay, so it's pretty much going to be rejecting most of our claims then when we go to send them. So, but we were given, a week's notice to be able to try to fix the system, and I've got the same concern that Carla does. What happens, you know, there's 40 states that use the Morrow Ticket Tracker, and we have, and he has to be given time to be able to convert some of these old service codes over to new, and that's quite an undertaking. And you guys just cut it off, and what is going to happen for all the
Virginia.
Claims that are going to be rejected?
Hey, Virginia, Eugenia, I'm sorry. This is Janelle, and you're absolutely right. We will give full consideration, so this is the same answer I previously provided. Just go ahead and send us those concerns. If you're an affected state, then just go ahead and send that to me asking for a waiver.
Okay, until we can get something fixed in the tracker,
yes.
Ticket tracker.
Okay, yes.
And my other question was, I had asked this question before, and I think you confirmed that it was correct. The information, like I said, there's 40-some state agencies that use the Morrow Ticket Tracker, and the tracker does provide those state UI wages. So when those batches of claims are imported into the portal, it's going to accept those state UI wages. Is that correct?
Yep, that is correct.
Okay, cool. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question is from Jay Morrow from Morrow Consulting. Please go ahead.
Got a few questions here, but first I just wanted to find one thing. Carla mentioned that a bunch of impacted on Thursday. It appears there was a change on the portal that the codes 136, 121, which were the old codes that are now being replaced. If any claims had either of those two codes, they got rejected even before the change on Friday. I had several states mention that, and I think that those will need to be resubmitted once the code changes occur. And I have an update to put out that does change all the RSA codes. The track will be able to submit with the correct codes. But I do need to work with each individual agency to get the systems converted so that the records come in using those new codes. But I'll be starting to do that tomorrow, And so I think it'll be probably like a week or two to get everyone set up with that update.
Thank you so much, Jay. We appreciate that. And you are right. So the update actually took place on Thursday night and not Friday, but we were not aware that that was going to happen. But you are correct.
Okay. Yeah, and it seemed to only affect codes 131. It was accepting the old codes except for those two, which are codes that were the overlap with the new codes. I'm not sure exactly why that, those two codes quit working and on ones that get accepted.
Jay, you're
if they had one of those two.
I'm sorry, Jay, you're breaking up on us.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to explain that it was just those two codes, the 136 and 121, that seemed to be affected prior to Friday.
Yes.
All the rest of them seemed to go through.
Yes,
okay.
You are correct. We were aware of that. Thank you.
For anyone that's asked on the chat, Jay said it's code 136 and 121 were the two codes.
They got rejected because she submitted them prior to the prior to that Friday, and they still got rejected.
Right.
So here are my my questions. So at the very beginning of the call, you guys mentioned that there's a high volume of rejections. Is there a way that I could get like the some information about what those rejections are? Because I would like to, you know, prevent any sort of claims going through that you know, if we have the information to know that there's a good likelihood that they're going to get rejected, to have some way of flagging those, you know, with the information that's available. So I'm not sure if you have that as something that's available that you could share with me.
Hi, Jay. This is Raquel. I think you missed it. Rob was actually speaking about denials and the high volume of denials that we have, not rejections.
Oh, okay. So I guess I'm not clear. What is a denial versus a rejection?
A rejection is when there's an error. So we don't even receive the actual claim. It's not on the pending list. Denial is the claim is actually received and processed, and it's denied.
Okay.
Based on
I'm interested in the denials then, because I would like to prevent, you know, records, you know, if there's information in people's case management systems or in the other information that they would have available, I'd like to make sure to not submit claims that we be denied. And so if there's any information that I could get on why there's so many being denied, that, you know, then I can put that logic into the tracker application to help prevent those from ever getting that far.
Jay, it's more of a documentation thing, more so than anything else.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a system.
Right. It's not a system issue whatsoever.
Okay. And then, so my next question is, you mentioned the wage information needs to get submitted with claims, but I don't know of any fields in that XML structure that allow you to submit the wage information. Like, that isn't a field, so I'm not sure where to submit that information.
This is Katie. Jay, you're correct. You cannot submit wage information through the XML. It has to be done by being faxed in.
So you guys are requiring that all claims come in like in paper format now, or a fax addition to each electronic claim?
Yes, that's correct. But that's always been a requirement. This isn't anything new. We've always had documentation requirement in our handbook.
But there's no way to submit that electronically? So when you submit 200 claims, you have to then additionally fax the wage verification information on each of those claims? Is that correct?
You do, yes. Each claim is its own entity, even if you do batching or whatever. So for each claim, it has to be properly documented. And at this time, that's the process.
Okay. Are there plans to have that in an electronic format at any time? Because it seems like that kind of defeats the purpose of streamlining it through the electronic submission process if you can't actually submit a claim electronically.
Well, it's still a form of electronic, because when you're sending it in through fax and it's appearing on our side as something scanned, it is paperless, so they're not mailing it. I mean, but that's as efficient as it is at this moment.
Okay. And then are the Verser ones, can you just have Verser in the remarks, and is that sufficient for documentation, or do you need more than that?
Yes, that's actually the process. And all of the states that have been, or the VRs, I'm sorry, that have been selected for participation, they do have the business process, which states for them to put Versa in the remarks for us to properly identify those claims.
Okay, but you don't need additional documentation for wages on those?
No, that's what Versa is for.
Okay. And when is the next round of pilot states going to get added into the Versa?
Jay, and if you want, just send us this offline because we only currently have 6 VRs participating in Versa, so we don't want to hold up the call with Versa-specific questions.
Okay.
Definitely shoot it to us offline.
Okay. Well, then I don't have any additional questions. I did want to make one last point that the reconsiderations in the update that's coming out that's going to have the new RSA codes, it makes sure that it's always the same as the original claim. So everything in the original claim will be a copy when you do a reconsideration.
Thanks so much, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, at this time, we have to unfortunately end the call. If anyone else has any additional comments or questions, please feel free to email the VR Help Desk, and as always, we'll get back with you as soon as possible. Just want to thank you all for another year of all VR calls. This is our last one for the fourth quarter. The next call will be first quarter 2020, January 14th at 3 p.m. Everyone have a wonderful day. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.